but was only willing to break kids out of camps whom he saw as powerful, useful. And that if the man was one to hold a grudge, there was a decent chance I'd be punished for making that plan as difficult as possible for him. We walked to the other side of the loop. Kate tapped her ID against the black pad there, waiting for the beep. A part of me already knew to hope it wouldn't flash green. There was no trace of heat left as we made our way down the cement stairs. The door slammed shut behind us on its own, sealing with a sucking noise. I turned back, startled, but Kate gently nudged me forward. It was another hallway, but different than the ones I'd seen upstairs on the first level. The lights here weren't as powerful and seemed set on a flickering loop. One look was all I needed to rear back, my heart climbing into my throat. This was Thurmond. This was a piece of what it had been to me. Rusted metal doors, solid cinder block walls only broken up by small observation windows. But this was a prison with 12 doors instead of dozens, with 12 people instead of thousands. The rancid smells tinged with a hint of bleach, the barren walls and floors. The only difference was that the PSFs would have punished us if we'd tried banging against the doors the way the prisoners currently were. Muffled voices were begging to be let out, and I wondered, for the first time, if any of the soldiers had felt the way I did now, sick, like my skin was tightening over the top of my skull. I knew exactly when their faces found the windows and their bloodshot eyes followed us to the end of the hall. Kate tapped her ID against the lock on the last door to the left, turning her face down into the shadows. The door popped open, and she pushed it in, motioning toward the bare table and set of chairs. The hanging bulb was already on, swaying. I dug my heels into the tile, pulling away from her. "What the hell is this?" I demanded. "It's all right," she said, her voice low and soothing. "We use this wing to hold assets or rogue agents we've brought in to question."
"You mean, interrogate them?"
I said. "No," I thought, the realization blooming like black spots in my vision. "Martin interrogated them. I'm going to interrogate them."
"I don't..."
I began. "I don't trust myself. I don't want to do this. I don't want any of this."
"I'll be here with you the whole time," Kate said.
"Nothing will happen to you. Albin just wants to see what your skill level is, and this is one of the few ways we can show him."
I almost laughed. Albin wanted to make sure he had made a good deal.
Kate shut the door and drew me into a seat at the metal table. I heard footsteps and started to rise, only to be guided back down.
"It'll just be a few minutes, Ruby, I promise."
"Why are you so surprised?" I asked myself. I knew what the League was, what they were about. Kate told me once it had been founded to expose the truth about the kids in camps. Funny, then, how far off message they'd traveled. I'd been here for less than a half a day, and even I could see that in 5 years, all they'd managed to accomplish was turn a few kids into soldiers, capture and interrogate people, and bring down a few key buildings. With the size and shape of the door's window, I couldn't see much more than Albin's dark face when it appeared there, flanked by a half dozen other men. His voice filtered in through a crackling intercom.
"Are we ready to proceed?"
Kate nodded, then stepped back, murmuring, "Just do as you're asked, Ruby." "That's all I've ever done." The door opened and three figures appeared. Two male agents, beyond fit in their green fatigues, and a small woman between them, who had to be dragged in and bound to the other chair with plastic ties. There was some kind of burlap hood over her head, and judging by the grunts and moans of protest, her mouth was gagged beneath it. A prick of dread started at the base of my neck and slowly zigzagged its way down my spine.
"Hello, my dear."
Albin's voice filtered through again.
"I hope you're well this evening."
John Albin had been an advisor in President Gray's cabinet until his own child, Alyssa, had been killed by IAAN. The way Kate explained it to me was that the guilt of it became too much for him. When he tried to take the truth, not the glossy, sugar-coated version of the camps, to the major newspapers, no one had been willing to run the story. Not when President Gray had wrangled an iron-fisted control over them. That was the legacy of the D.C. bombings. Good men gone unheard, and bad men taking every advantage. His dark skin looked weathered by middle age, and the heavy bags beneath his wide eyes made his whole face sag.
It is a pleasure to have you here, of course. My advisors and I would very much like to see the extent of your abilities and how they might benefit our organization.
I nodded, my tongue fixed to the top of my mouth.
We believe this woman has been passing information to Gray's men, sabotaging the operations we sent her on for his benefit. I would like you to explore her recent memories and tell me if this is true.
He thought it was that easy, did he? A peek inside, and there are the answers. I squared my shoulders and gazed at him through the glass. I wanted him to know that I knew, that I was well aware of the fact he was standing behind that door for protection, not from this woman, but from me. All I had to do was earn his trust, gain a tiny bit of freedom, and when the time was right, he'd regret ever giving me someone to practice my abilities on. He'd wake up one morning to find me gone, every trace of me erased from this hole in the ground. This was a waiting game for me. Once I confirmed the others were safe, I'd get myself out, break the deal. You'll have to give me a specific operation to look for, I said, wondering if he could even hear me. Otherwise, we might be here all night.
I understand.
His voice crackled through.
It should go without saying that what you hear and see when you are on this hall is privileged information your peers will never have access to. Should we find that any of this intel is being shared, there will be repercussions.
I nodded.
Excellent. This agent recently went to meet a contact to pick up a packet of information from him.
Where?
Outside of San Francisco. That is as precise as I'm able to get.
Did the contact have a name? There was a long pause. I didn't need to look up from the woman's hooded face to know the advisors were conferring with one another. Finally, his voice filtered back through.
Ambrose.
The two soldiers who brought the woman in retreated back outside. She heard the door lock, but it wasn't until I reached across the way to touch her bound wrist that she tried to jerk away from me. Ambrose, I said. San Francisco. Ambrose. San Francisco. Those words, over and over again, as I sank into her mind. The pressure that had been steadily building from the moment I boarded the plane in Maryland released with a soft sigh. I felt myself lean closer to her, a rushing stream of thoughts filtering through her mind. They were blindingly bright. There was a painfully intense sheen to them, as if each memory had been dipped in pure sunlight. Ambrose, San Francisco. The intel. Ambrose, San Francisco. It was a trick Clancy had taught me. That mentioning a specific word or phrase or name to someone was often enough to draw it straight into that person's forethoughts. The woman relaxed under my fingers. Mine. Ambrose, I repeated quietly. It was noon, or near two. I was the agent, and she was me. And we shot a quick glance up toward the sun directly above us. The scene shimmered as I ran through a deserted park, black tennis shoes gliding through the overgrown grass. There was a building up ahead, a public restroom. It didn't surprise me then that a gun suddenly appeared in my right hand. The better I got at this, the more senses came to me with the images. A smell here, a sound there, a touch.
I'd felt the cold metal tucked into the band of my running shorts from the moment I stepped into the memory. The man waiting at the back of the building didn't even have time to turn before he was on the ground, a hole the size of a dollar coin in the back of his skull. I recoiled, dropping the woman's wrist. The last sight I had before I cut the connection was a blue folder and its contents scattering in the wind, drifting down into a nearby pond. I opened my eyes, though the light from the hanging bulb made the throbbing behind my eyes that much worse. At least it wasn't a migraine. The pain might have been lessening every time I did this, but the disorientation was still just as bad. It took me 2 seconds to remember where I was, and another 2 to find my voice. She met a man in a park, behind the public restrooms. She shot him in the back of the head after approaching him from behind. The intel he carried was in a blue folder.
Did you see what happened to it?
Albin's tone was tinged with excitement. It's at the bottom of the pond, I said. Why did she shoot him? If he was her contact...
Enough, Ruby, Kate cut in. Send them in, please.
The woman was limp, still half-dazed with my influence over her. She didn't fight them off, as they snapped her restraints and picked her up out of the chair. But I thought I heard her crying.
What's going to happen to her?
I pressed, turning back toward Kate.
Enough,
she said again. I flinched at her tone.
May we have your permission to be excused? Are you satisfied with her results?
This time Albin met us at the door, but he never crossed that last bit of space between us, never even looked me once in the eye.
Oh, yes, he said softly. We are more than satisfied. This is a special thing you can do, my dear, and you have no idea the difference you can make for us.
But I did. Liam hadn't told me a great deal about his time with the League. It had been short and brutal, and so damaging that he had taken his chance and escaped at the first opportunity that presented itself. But without either of us realizing it, he had prepared me for the new reality of my life, warning me once, twice, 3 times that the League would control every move I made, that they would expect me to take someone else's life, just because it suited their needs and was what they wanted. He had told me about his brother, Cole, and what he had become under the coaxing of the League's guiding hands. Cole. I knew from League gossip that he was a hotshot, a deep cover agent with terrifying efficiency. I knew from Liam that he thrived on the pulse of power that came from firing a gun. But what no one, not even Liam, had thought to mention was how very, very much alike they looked. 3. For whatever reason, Jude had nominated himself to serve as the team's one-man welcoming committee. When I arrived back at HQ after my first op with the League, it had been his lanky, pacing shape waiting for me at the end of the entry hall, torpedoing toward me, burying me under an avalanche of questions. 6 months later, he was still the only one who waited there for us, rewarding our safe return with a smile that split his face. I braced myself for impact as Vida tapped her ID against the door. Rob and the remaining members of the TACT team had escorted Cole Stewart in a few minutes before, but I'd forced us to hang back, take our time going down the tunnel. It was important to make sure Rob got the full credit for this one, to let him roll around in the glory like a dog in the grass. We'd heard the cheers go up as they strolled through the entry, and watched them pump their fists as they strode into HQ, almost leaving Cole behind in his wheelchair. Now there was no one left in the long white entry hall. The agents left a trail of celebratory noise behind them. It shrank with every step they took, until the only thing I could hear was my own breathing. And the only thing I could see was the empty space at the end of the hallway where Jude should have been.
Oh, thank you, Jesus, Vida said, stretching her arms over her head. One day I won't have to get my back realigned from his death grip. Adios, boo.
I think some people use the nickname Boo as a term of endearment. Vida used it to make you feel like one of those little dogs that have brains the size of thumbs and piddle all over themselves when they get too excited. I let her go without a word, heading left toward Kate and the other senior agent quarters to check in. 5 minutes of fruitless knocking later, I ducked my head into the atrium to see if she was there. She's probably with the others, I thought, scanning the near-empty space. And while I didn't glimpse her white blonde hair at one of the tables, I did recognize the mop of reddish-brown curls parked in front of one of the TVs. I wasn't lucky enough to pull off a clean getaway. Those 2 seconds of staring had been enough for him to register my gaze. Jude glanced down at his old plastic wristwatch and then back up at me again in horror.
"Rue!" he called, waving me over. "I'm so sorry, so sorry. I totally lost track of time. Did everything go okay? Did you just get back now? Where's Vida? Is she..."
I wasn't a good enough person to say that no part of me wanted to turn and run out before he could come up and loop my arm through his, dragging me across the room with him. It was only when I crossed the room that I noticed Nico was there, sitting at the opposite end of the table. One of the cement pillars had blocked the sight of him from the door, but it also didn't help that the kid didn't seem to be moving. At all. I followed his stony gaze down to the little device on the table. A chatter. It was the size of a phone and could easily have doubled for one if you weren't casting too careful of an eye on it. They'd salvaged an older generation of phones, the kind with an actual keypad rather than a sleek touchscreen. The new shells they'd created for them were oval and thin enough to slide into a back pocket or up a sleeve during a lesson. A couple of the Greens had developed this little gem with the idea that agents could relay digital messages, photos, and short videos back home without needing to ditch burner phone after burner phone. The tech behind them was mostly a mystery to me, but I understood they communicated on some unhackable network the Greens had developed. They could only be used to contact other chatters on the network, and only then if you had the other chatter's secret PIN number. They were useless if you needed to send large images or video files longer than 30 seconds. Alban had rejected sending them out in the field for that reason, dismissing them as some bored kid's project. As far as I knew, the Greens usually just used them now to chat with one another in HQ when they were in different training sessions or at night after lights out.
"Really come back? Did you get to meet the agent? Was he as badass as everyone says? Can we..."
"What's going on?" I asked, looking between Nico and the TV screen. They'd picked the one showing only local California weather and news. It was like I'd sucked the words straight out of him. Jude tensed in that wide-eyed way of his before flashing the kind of smile that was trying too hard. "What's going on?" I repeated. Jude swallowed, glancing at Nico before leaning down to my ear. His eyes were scanning the atrium like they were looking for dark corners that didn't exist.
"They sent Blake Howard out on an op," he said. "We're just..."
"Blake Howard? The green kid from Team One? The one who looked like you could take him out with one well-aimed sneeze?" Jude nodded, giving another nervous glance behind me.
"I'm just worried, you know. Nico is too."
Shocker. Nico was never one to pass up a good conspiracy theory, especially when it came to the League. Every agent was a double agent. Alban was actually working with Gray to bring down the Federal Coalition. Someone was poisoning our water supply with lead. I don't know where he got it from, or if it was just the way his brain was processing all of the information he was absorbing, and he didn't know how to shut it off.
"They must be trading him for something," Nico said, gripping the chatter. "For information? To get another agent back? That's not so crazy, right? There are so many Greens here already. They hate having so many of us. They hate us."
I tried not to roll my eyes. "Did the op involve tech?" I asked.
"Well, yeah, but..." Jude said. "When have they ever sent out a Team One kid? They're supposed to be for HQ use only."
He wasn't wrong. Vida called them the Squeakers, and the name had stuck with everyone. All greens, with supercharged logic and reasoning skills that the League put to use in deciphering codes and building computer viruses, creating these insane devices. They all had the same stumbling walk. Nico, too. A weird half-step where they dragged their feet against the tile, causing their sneakers to make these little squeaking noises. I'm sure they had picked it up from one another subconsciously. They were always moving in sync, just like the parts of a working machine should. "He's of age, and he has the right skill set to help them," I said. "I know for a fact the other green teams are occupied this week. He might have been a last resort."
"No," Jude said. "We think they picked him on purpose. They wanted him."
It was a while before Jude built up the nerve to look at me again. When he did, his expression was so obviously ashamed and terrified that I felt myself soften just enough to ask, "Is there something you're not telling me? What am I missing here?" Jude twisted the stretched-out hem of his shirt into a knot. Nico only stared straight ahead, eyes unblinking as they fixed on the chatter.
"Me, Nico, and Blake," Jude began. "The three of us were messing around a few days ago down here. We've been trying to build one of those remote-control cars from leftover computer parts."
"Okay."
"Nico had to go up and talk to Kate, but me and Blake took the car on a test drive around this floor. It was around 2 in the afternoon, and no one was down here. So we thought it would be fine that we wouldn't bother anyone, but, you know those rooms that we used to store things for ops? Like the vests, extra ammo, that stuff?"
I nodded.
"We heard voices coming from one of them. I thought maybe the guys were just playing a card game or something. Sometimes they do it down here so they can badmouth Albin or one of the advisors," Jude said, visibly shaking now. "But when I heard them, what they were actually saying, they weren't playing a game, Rue. They were talking about us. It was Rob and Jarvan and a couple of their friends. They kept saying things like reducing the freak population and getting Albin back on track and how they were going to prove what a waste of time and resources we were."
It was a chill that sank straight to the bone. I pulled out the nearest chair and dragged it closer to Nico. Jude did the same, his hands twisting around each other. "And they caught you listening?"
"I know it's stupid, but when I heard that, I freaked out. I didn't mean to, but I dropped the car. We ran before the door opened, but I'm positive they saw us. I heard Rob call my name."
"Then what?" I pressed. My mind was making connections now, dangerous ones.
"Then Blake got assigned to that op even though he's on Team One. Jarvan said that they needed a green to hack into the company's server room, and he didn't have a choice."
I leaned back slowly. Reduce the freak population. My ear, the one that had taken the brunt of the grenade's blast, seemed to have a pulse of its own. That was an accident, I told myself. Rob was just being reckless. But the second lie sounded less convincing than the first. Reduce the freak population. How? By putting them in deadly situations on ops that could be waved off as accidents? Rob had killed kids before. I only knew of those two I'd glimpsed in his memory, but what's to say there weren't more?
Jesus.
A blinding wave of nausea blasted up from my stomach. Did he kill them to keep the number of kids here down? No. No, I needed to stop. My thoughts were spiraling and getting out of hand. This was Nico and Jude, two boys with too much free time to sit around and trade nightmares. They were constantly poking at trouble, then acted all shocked when it turned around and bit them in their asses. "It's just a coincidence," I said. I had another point to make, I'm sure, but it unhooked from my chain of thoughts when I heard someone call my name from across the room. One of Albin's advisors, good old Raccoon Face, stood in the atrium's doorway.
"He'd like to speak to you in his office an hour from now."
Then he turned on his heel and was gone, clearly angry he'd been tasked to play messenger.
What does he want?
Jude asked, visibly confused. You almost never saw the walking suits more than a few feet away from Alban. I wouldn't have been surprised if they broke into his quarters every night and took turns whispering plans and sweet nothings in his ear while he slept. There were 10 men total, all over the age of 50, who had divided up the areas of Alban's focus and assumed control over each. They coordinated and approved ops, brought in supplies and new contacts, recruited new trainers, managed the league's finances. All so Alban could focus on big-picture goals and targets. Jude claimed they were only there because Gray wanted them dead for one reason or another, and they had no choice but to go underground. I still didn't know half of their names, since most made it a point to never directly engage with the Psy freaks. It was easier just to fixate on their features and nickname from there. Raccoon face, monkey ears, horse teeth, and frog lips were the ones I saw most. What the names lacked in creativity, they made up for in accuracy.
A debrief? Already?
Jude asked, glancing to the TV again. I reached over and manually flipped the machine off.
Hey!
You're late, I said, pointing to the clock on the wall. Another 2 minutes and Instructor Johnson will hit you with a demerit.
So?
Jude shot back.
This is more important!
More important than eventually being activated? I said. Because the last time I checked, you were 2 demerits away from being stuck on HQ support forever. It was a mean tactic to play. Nico's fuming look told me as much. But he knew, probably better than I did, that a future in which Jude never got to go out on an op was a future Jude would have sold both arms to avoid. I walked them out, tailing them all the way to the training room in case they got any ideas about slipping away. The teams we usually trained with, 2, 3, and 4, were already there, warming up, darkening the wall of mirrors. This was the one part in all of HQ that actually smelled fully human. The stench of sweat and warm bodies gave this hall a jolt of real, tangible life. It was better than the mildew, at least. Instructor Johnson nodded in my direction as I held the door open, the fluorescent lights bleaching his already blonde hair. Both Vida and I were excused from lessons and training for the day, but tomorrow they'd start all over again for us. I'd fall back into this place's pattern, grateful for the relief of not needing to think about anything other than moving from hour to hour, door to door. A life lesson on how to cope, courtesy of Thurmond. Jude and Nico could both hate me for this. I didn't care. I just couldn't afford to feed on their fear and let it twist my own. I'd worked so hard to numb myself to this place, and they didn't get to blow that apart. They got my attention, my concern, my protection, but they didn't get that. Showered, fed, clothing changed, and thoughts collected, I was ready to meet with John Alban, but he wasn't ready for me. There was a lot you could say about the League's founder, and maybe 2 words of it were actually flattering. He was a smart man. No one was going to deny it. The League was what it was today because of him. It was just that some felt it was time for him to take the assaults against Gray to a new level, and others were pressing for him to hold the course, since it was working. I thought he had every right to want to think more about such a huge decision, but I understood their impatience. I knew they wanted to capitalize on the growing discontent and murmurs of protests we'd been tracking. I heard voices beyond the door, soft at first, then inflamed enough to catch my attention. Every intention I had of knocking fell apart the longer I stood there listening.
No, Alban was saying. My God, no, no! How many times do I need to repeat the word for it to join your vocabulary? It was the answer the first time you presented it to the senior staff, when you convinced Jarvan to present it to the advisors, and yes, now.
You're not thinking this through. I rocked back on my heels instinctively, away from Rob's harsh voice.
You think we can keep this up without making a big statement? How many of these things do you just have sitting around HQ wasting our time and energy?
Alban cut him off.
They are not things,
As you, I'm sure, are well aware, this is non-negotiable. The ends will never justify the means, no matter how you try to pitch this. Never. They are children.
In the back of my mind, a thought was beginning to knot itself with another, darker one, but I forced my attention to stay here. Now.
You're the one who always says anything to get Gray out, aren't you? The distraction would be more than enough for us to go in and dismantle the camps, blast the news out to the rest of the damn country. This is the only way in now. They've wised up to our forged IDs. We can't even get in to extract the agents we still have embedded in the camps. They're waiting for us. We're all waiting for you to do something. Decide something.
There was a long, bitter silence that followed. Whatever words Albin was looking for, he never found them. I couldn't keep my own mind in check. What kind of plan could get him this worked up?
I'm just warning you, Rob continued, sounding calmer, that even I've heard agents wondering about what kind of policy we're moving toward. A good number still think that you want to rekindle things with Gray in the end, that you miss your friend.
I closed my eyes. It was an unspoken rule that we didn't bring up Albin's former friendship with President Gray and the First Lady for any reason. Kate told me once that Albin didn't even like to be reminded of the work he'd done as Secretary of Homeland Security. So I imagine he wasn't thrilled to be reminded he was once in a small circle of people who enjoyed private dinners in the executive residence of the White House. A new voice chimed in.
John, let's not dismiss this entirely. This is a tactic that's been employed before, and it is effective. They wouldn't know. We have ways of hiding the mechanism.
I was so focused on the conversation in front of me that I didn't hear the person who hobbled up behind me. Not until he was hovering at my back, tapping on my shoulder to get my attention.
I'd keep this one to yourself, Keyhole Kate, Cole said.
Or do you need to hear the old one about that pesky cat and his curiosity?
It was too late to jump back and pretend I hadn't been listening, and now I was too flustered to bother trying. The medic on Rob's team had done a good job patching up the deeper cuts on Cole's face, cleaning away the filth from his skin. He was wearing a loose shirt and pants that were a number of sizes too big for him, but he was out of his old vomit-stained rags, at least. He looked like a different person, and I was grateful for it. It was easier to get a look at him. And I finally was getting a good one. When Liam had told me he had an older brother, I had imagined him to be much older, 25 or 26, the same age as Kate. But I'd overheard some of Rob's tact team complaining about him on the flight back, about his punk-ass attitude, how he was only 21, but Albin wasted all of the good ops on him, the little golden boy. 3 years. That was all that separated him from Liam, from IAAN. Cole was a member of that narrow generation that had been just old enough to avoid the disease's grip.
Didn't get much of a chance to talk on the plane, did we?
He said, bandaged fingers brushing the damp hair back over my shoulder. He had a few inches on his brother, which I became well aware of as he leaned down to study my face, a pirate smile working across his own. Cole might have been narrower through the shoulders and waist, but there was something familiar about his stance. I shook my head, trying to clear the flush from my cheeks as I knocked on the door. It brought the argument inside to an abrupt end. Albin rose from behind his dark wood desk as I came in, shutting his laptop and cutting off the low murmur of the radio scanners on the nearby table. Rob and the frog-lipped advisor were already standing, both of their faces flushed from the argument. Seeing us, Rob rolled his eyes up and away, leaning against one of Albin's many shelves of useless knick-knacks from his old life.
Sir, I said, you wanted to see me?
Goodness. Sit down, sit down, Albin said, waving a hand toward one of the folding chairs opposite him. You both look dead on your feet.
I'm fine, I said, then added, thank you. as an afterthought. I hated how small my voice became around him. Hated it. Alban settled back down into his seat, lips pulling back to reveal a smile of mostly yellow teeth. The man didn't make it out that much in public, not with a hefty bounty on his head. If they needed him to make a recorded video speech, they always cleaned up his pockmarked skin and brightened his complexion in post-production. They also liked to Photoshop him into pictures of American landscapes or cities to give the impression that he was a lot more fearless about going outside than he actually was.
"I'd like to have a casual debriefing about the operation to retrieve Agent Stewart last night, if the three of you are agreeable. I don't think it can wait."
He waited until Cole had eased himself down into the chair next to mine before reaching across the desk to clasp his hand.
"I can't tell you how good it is to see your face again, my dear boy." "Well, lucky you."
Cole dragged the words out, with no short supply of bitterness.
"It seems like you'll be seeing a lot of this beautiful boy from now on."
"Cut it out," I told myself before I could tense. Cole was not Liam, no matter how much alike they looked, no matter how similar their voices were. Focus on the differences. Cole was more solidly built than Liam, and cleaner cut, too. He'd buzzed his hair down since I'd last seen him, making it look two shades darker than the blonde I knew it was. The Liam I had known was scruffy around the edges, warm in every way imaginable. And here was his older brother, stiff and beaten within an inch of his life, looking like he had been carved from ice. Not looking all that different from the state I'd left Liam in. And it was so awful. So horrible how quickly my mind swapped in one brother for the other. How much it lifted my spirit and eased the tightness in my chest to imagine Liam was here, next to me again. Stop. It. Frog Lips shut the office door and retreated to the corner of the small room, slipping into Alban's shadow.
"Would never, normally, interrupt your recuperation," Alban was saying. "But after hearing Agent Meadows' oral report, it sounds like there was some, shall we say, confusion. I'm interested to hear what happened from your perspective, Ruby."
I didn't register he had spoken to me at all until Rob pushed himself off the bookcase, the wide expanse of his shoulders spreading as he took a deep breath. Before leaving on the op, he'd buzzed his dark hair short again. It made the bones in his face more pronounced. It changed the way the shadows fell against his skin. God, why were we doing this? Where was Kate? I was never debriefed without her, and never here in Alban's office, behind a closed door. I was surprised by how anxious I was. I didn't trust her, but somewhere along the way, I guess I'd gotten used to her silent, steady presence, waiting to catch me if I tripped up. "Are we waiting for anyone else?" I asked, careful to keep my voice steady. Alban understood my question.
"This is just a casual talk, Ruby. The level of secrecy surrounding this op means that we can't hold a debriefing in front of the whole organization. You should feel free to speak your mind."
I pressed my hands down on my knees, trying to keep them from bouncing. "Agent Meadows," I started, sounding too loud to my own ears. "Ran through the mission parameters with us on the flight, laying out the objective and what we knew about this particular bunker's layout. He also reminded us of the fallback plans we had discussed prior to leaving." Alban's mouth was wide and fairly unskilled at hiding his feelings. One corner twitched up.
"And did any of these fallback plans include you and Vida leaving the bunker?"
"No, sir," I said. "Agent Meadows ordered us to hold our position in the stairwell to cover them from there." Alban placed his elbows on the table and leaning his chin against his fingers.
"Can you explain, then, why you left?"
I didn't turn to look at Rob, but I knew he was looking at me. Everyone was, and from the weight of their stares, I got the impression that Meadows had already answered this question himself. If I get Rob in trouble, I thought, how much trouble will I be in? He had a hot temper. I had known he'd be angry even when I made the choice to stay outside with Vida. But it would be nothing compared to his fury if I sold him out and told the others about what happened on the stairs. I couldn't let them see the creeping suspicions on my face. I couldn't ask the questions I wanted to. Why didn't you warn us? My comm had been working then. I would have heard him. The stairwell was compromised. I gave Vida the order to leave so we could monitor the situation from outside.
And you didn't tell me this because?
Rob asked, his anger already betraying him. My comm was broken, I said, as you saw when we regrouped. He grunted.
All right, Albin said after a moment. The stairway was compromised. How so?
There was a grenade. Rob set off a grenade. 9 words. One perfect way to ensure Rob would be forced to swallow every ounce of bitter reprimanding he deserved. Albin would believe me. He had never, not once, doubted my word. Had defended it, even, to his advisors after I'd pulled some unwanted news out of an unfortunate mind. 9 words to tell him the truth. That Rob had jacked his own op, by sheer stupidity or intentionally, and came within a hair's width of killing both Vida and me. I don't know how I knew, or even why I felt so sure of it. It was as certain as the blood thundering in my ears. If I nailed him on this, embarrassed him, next time he had me in his sights, he wouldn't miss. It wasn't well built, and it collapsed, I explained. It couldn't handle the weight of all of us at once. Crappy construction.
All right, Albin said, drawing the words out. Agent Stewart reported that it was you and Vida who actually retrieved him. How did that come to pass?
She and the other one completely ignored my order to return to the bunker. That's how, Rob said. I know for a fact she heard it. I know that you were the one who refused to double back.
All 4 men had turned toward me. My vision narrowed, black, seeping in again at the edges. I pressed a hand to my throat, pulling at the tight collar, trying to free the breath that was caught there. I wanted Liam. All I wanted was Liam right there, standing close enough for me to breathe in the leather, the smoke, the sweet grass.
Ruby,
Albin said, his voice as calm and deep and patient as the sea.
Will you please answer my question?
I just wanted this to be over. I wanted to go back to the sleeping room, crawl into my bunk in the cold darkness, and drift into nothing. He's right. I told Vida to disregard the orders. Once we went above ground, we saw that the National Guardsmen were moving the prisoners out of an entrance we didn't know about. I didn't ask for permission to proceed. I know I should have.
Because you goddamn know the only thing you're supposed to do is follow your leader's orders, Rob barked. You think we would have lost so many men if you'd been there to cover our escape?
The TVs behind Albin were off, but I swear I could hear their static breath growing louder and louder the longer the man stayed silent. He pressed a hand to the top of his head, but didn't once tear his gaze away from me. And then came Cole's voice, southern as sweet tea.
Well, thank God you disobeyed. Otherwise, I'd be halfway to hell by now.
It was clear that I had underestimated just how much influence Cole actually carried in the organization. Influence wasn't the right word for it. A sway, maybe, that was mostly charm, backed up by deadly results. Albin's eyebrows rose, but he only nodded, allowing Cole to continue.
I mean, let's call a spade here, Cole said, leaning back to make himself more comfortable. She's the one who got me out. Why should she be in trouble? She disobeyed my direct orders.
Cole dismissed Rob with a bored wave.
I mean, Christ, look at the poor girl. She got the shit beat out of her on my behalf. If you think I'm gonna stay quiet and let her take the blame for a mission that wasn't, by the way, a failure, you have another think coming.
No one spoke. I stared openly at Cole's smug expression, then at Rob's murderous one. The sliver of space between them was filled with more than just distrust and annoyance. There were years of history resting there, colored with a hatred I didn't understand. The tension in Albin's face bled off like running rain until he, too, was smiling.
I'm inclined to agree with Agent Stewart here. Ruby, thank you for thinking so fast on your feet.
Albin shuffled a few papers around on his desk.
Agent Meadows, I'll review your full report this evening. For now, you're dismissed.
When the senior agent stood, so did I, swinging toward the door for a quick escape. Instead, Albin's voice caught me.
Just one more thing, Ruby, if you don't mind. I'd like to discuss something with you and Cole.
Let me go, let me go, let me go. Rob did not like this, that much was clear, but he also had no choice. The door shut so hard behind him, it actually rattled the old glass Coke bottles lining the shelf over it.
Now, on a different note.
Albin looked my way.
I should begin by saying that you're being trusted here, my dear, well above your security clearance. If I hear a word of this conversation being breathed outside of these office walls, there will be consequences. The same rules apply here as downstairs.
No, please not this. Please don't let it be this. Yes, sir. Satisfied, he turned toward Cole.
I meant what I said before. I'm sorry to have to do this before you've fully recovered. But, as you're well aware, we need to retrieve the intel that was taken from you.
I am well aware, Cole said, but I told you I don't know who has it. They knocked me out, and I saw someone take it, but truthfully, sir, I don't remember much beyond what happened after they got me to the bunker. I'm not sure it was my contact who picked it up.
I watched him drag a bandaged hand over his close-cropped blonde hair, wondering if it was as obvious to Albin as it was to me that he wasn't telling the truth.
And that's understandable, considering the circumstances, Albin said, leaning back in his chair.
He threaded his fingers together and rested them over the bulge of his stomach.
This is where Ruby comes in. She's been instrumental in helping to jog the memories of assets. She's helped us track down more than one piece of information that's gone astray.
Please, please, please not him. I didn't want to see inside his mind. I didn't want to see flashes of Liam or their life. I just wanted to get away from him before my shrinking rib cage shredded my heart. Cole went pale under his tan, from the creases between his brows down to the fingers clenching the armrests of the plastic chair.
Oh, come on now, Albin laughed. I've been told it's completely painless, and if it's not, we'll have her stop immediately.
That I didn't doubt. Even if I went rogue and didn't release Cole's mind, all of the advisors and senior agents carried these handheld speakers that functioned like miniature white noise machines.
You're the first to volunteer to jump off bridges and infiltrate the PSFs. And you can't let a girl take a quick peek inside your memories for the good of your family here? For the good of your country?
Albin's smile never wavered, despite all of his needling. Clever, I thought. The do-it-for-your-glorious-country speech was one step above a direct order, and Cole was smart enough to realize how much better it would look if he agreed by his own free will.
All right, Cole said, finally turning to look at me. What do you need me to do?
It was several moments before I found my voice, but I was proud of how strong it sounded. Give me your hand.
Be gentle with me, sweetheart, Cole said, his fingers giving a slight twitch as they touched mine.
Alban laughed outright at this, but Cole blew out an uneven breath and closed his eyes. His hand was ice cold and slick to the touch. I tried to ignore the insistent press of his thumb against mine. It always felt like Liam's hand swallowed mine when he held it, but this one was somehow bigger, the palms rough with the kind of calluses that only came with years of being shredded by weights and weapons and fights. The way the fingers on his left hand kept twitching every few minutes. I didn't want to think about any of it. I kept my eyes on his left hand, the two fingers that twitched now and then as he quietly fought through the pain of his injuries. Try to relax, I said. Can you tell me what it is that I'm looking for? What it is, what size, what color, as detailed as you can possibly get. Cole's eyes were still closed.
A standard size flash drive. A little black stick about the length of my thumb.
I had done this so many times over the last 6 months that I no longer felt any kind of pain, but I braced myself anyway. His hand was shaking slightly, or maybe it was mine. I tightened my fingers around his, trying to steady the both of us. Think back to the last moment you remember having it. Try to bring it to mind if you can. The breath went out of Cole in two short bursts. It felt like slipping beneath the still surface of a sun-warmed river. For all the effort it took to get through his natural defenses, there was nothing cold or still about the smears of colors and shapes streaming past me. But they were moving too fast. Here and there I saw faces or objects, a green apple, a lonesome swing, a small stuffed bear burning in dying grass, a door with a messy "keep out" sign scribbled in crayon, almost like he was trying to think of everything but the thing I had specifically asked for. Cole was practically limp in his chair, his head slowly falling toward my shoulder. I thought I felt him shake it, his hair brushing against my neck. Show me when you lost the memory card, I said quietly. The black flash drive. The memory floated up as quickly as if I had plucked it from the water. A little boy, wearing overalls, no more than 2 or 3, sitting in the middle of a sea of taupe carpet, bawling at the top of his lungs. The flash drive, I said again. The scene smeared down and away, replaced by a nighttime sky and a crackling bonfire that cast a warm glow over the nearby tent and the dark silhouettes moving inside of it.
Philadelphia, I heard Alban say behind me. Philadelphia, Cole. The lab.
Cole must have registered the man's voice because I felt him flinch against me. I pressed harder, plunging my hands into the stream, suddenly worried about what would happen to me if I couldn't produce the kind of results that Alban was after. The flash drive, I thought. Philadelphia. The memory wavered, hovering black and still like a drop of loose ink at the tip of a pen, and with one last shudder, it finally slid free. The scene shifted around me, throwing me out into a rainy night. A flash of light cut across the brick wall to my left, then another. Car headlights. I couldn't hear the squeal of brakes or the accelerator revving, but I was Cole, seeing things as he was seeing them then. And Cole was running. Dirty water and stray garbage flew up around my ankles. I kept one hand against the brick wall, feeling through the dark. The concrete flashed as if something sharp had sparked against it, then again and again, until I knew exactly what was happening. I was being shot at, and their aim was getting better. I took one flying leap up, catching the black ladder of a fire escape and dragging it back down to the ground. My hands were stiff and frozen, to the point that I could barely curl them around the bars as I climbed. And still, the shooting didn't stop. Not until I was rolling onto the rough finish of the roof, catching dust and loose plaster in my hair. Then I was up and off like a shot, jumping from that building's roof onto the next. I saw the ground in the second it took me to soar over it. The flashing red and blue lights of the police car tracked my progress across the building tops like a mocking shadow. Overhead, the wind stirred, plucking at the loose button-down shirt I wore. I dropped over the edge of the next building, gagging slightly at the overpowering smell of rotting garbage. My feet hit the rubber lid of the dumpster, and the shock of the impact buckled my knees and hurtled me headfirst into the ground. There was a heartbeat, maybe two, but I was too stunned by the pain to actually move. I had just gotten my hands under me when the alleyway flooded with pure white light. You can't move very fast with a limp, and you can't go very far with a dead end at your back. But I scrambled up anyway, bolting for the battered door to my left, letting the soldiers and police holler what they would after me. My steps were slow, but sure. I knew where I was going, and I made sure the door locked in place behind me. It took two precious seconds for my eyes to adjust to the dim hallway. I stumbled up the stairs to 2A, a pale blue door, and shouldered it open. The apartment was lit. Coffee was still brewing on the counter, but there was no one inside. I checked every room, under the bed, in the closets, before making my way back out into the hall, reaching for the black jacket hanging there. The building seemed to shake with the force of boots on the narrow stairwell. My hands shook as they grabbed the jacket, feeling the inside lining, running over the bottom seam in disbelief over and over again. The door exploded open beside me, and there was no opportunity to move, to fight, to run. I was tackled onto the ground, my arms wrenched behind my head and locked there. I saw their boots step over me, heading toward the other rooms, their guns up and ready to fire as they cleared each one. And it was only then, after they reappeared, that I was dragged downstairs, past the shocked faces of my neighbors, through the battered outside door, back into the rain, where a black van waited to carry me off. There were PSFs, National Guardsmen, police. There was no way out. I didn't struggle as they lifted me up into the rear of the van and locked my handcuffs into place. There were other people in there, but none of them were familiar. None of them were him. I don't know why I looked up then. Instinct, maybe, or desperation. The door was slamming shut on my life, and still, the most important thing was that half-second image of Liam's terrified face beneath the nearby flickering streetlight, disappearing into the dark. 4.
How could you?
Kate's shrill voice rang out.
She hasn't slept for the past 2 days, and you put her through this?
I kept my eyes fixed on a small garden statue of a prancing boy, half hidden by the American flag hanging from Alban's desk. I was on the floor, flat on my back, but I had no memory of getting there.
She is not a trained puppy who will perform tricks for you at the drop of a hat.
Kate had a way of yelling without ever raising her voice.
She is a child. Please, do not solicit her services, as you so eloquently put it, without checking with me first.
I think, came Alban's thin reply. That's about all the lecturing I can stand to take from you today, Agent Connor. This child is of an age now to make her own decisions, and while she may report to you, you report to me, and I do not ever need to check with you or vet my decisions with you, and I will ask you now very kindly to leave this office before you say something that you will regret.
I forced myself off the ground and back into the chair. Kate lunged forward to help me, but I was already there, brushing her off. It looked like she hadn't slept either. Her hair was matted and stringy, her face as ashen as I'd ever seen it. She had burst in here like a tornado 5 minutes ago and hadn't stopped to even take a breath. I don't know who tipped her off. Rob, maybe? But the only thing she had accomplished in that time was making me feel like a humiliated 5-year-old. I'm fine, I told her, but she didn't look convinced.
I'll wait outside, she said.
Then you'll be waiting for some time. We have a guest downstairs that I'd like Ruby to meet.
Of course. Why would I get a day off from entertainment?